Thanks to our sponsor, Walker Digital, who've stepped in to help the Numbers Game podcast with their social media. Walker Digital are a digital marketing agency covering strategy, content, video, implementation, and education. The team at Walker have spread the word of our clients and love working with businesses doing good things, helping them to grow and reach more people so they can scale and get larger. I know personally, the first thing I did when growing our business was to outsource social media, blogs, and copywriting because I knew it was something that was not the best use of my time, and the team at Walker Digital smashed it. Sometimes you need to walk before you can run. Find out more at their website, wlkr.digital. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed. Welcome to episode 39 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jason. I'm here with Nick and Marty. It is time to get fired up. We're talking customer loyalty and targeting the right customer. How have you guys been before we crack into the show, guys? I might as well just, you know, let you guys do a bit of talking on how what's been going on.
Oh, shut up, Jace. Yes, let us do some talking here. No, I'm pumped up, mate. I've people complained all week about interest rates going up, and I've just pulled out this magical figure that interest rates in Argentina have gone up to 42.3% just to match inflation. So if you've got a house where a mortgage worth $350,000, your repayments have gone up to about $11,000 a month. Oof. So stop your whinging. We're going to be all right here in Australia. I'm feeling good. You should be feeling good too. Nick Riley, how are you going, my friend?
Mate, I'm well. And just to finish off your story there about shut your whinging, but I think the household savings hit a record of $220 billion, I think, at the end of last year. And then I think business savings was another $200 billion or something on top of that. So we're at record saving levels of $420 billion. So, you know, I'm sure 1% in interest rate jump over the next 18 months that we're going to see is not too much of an issue. But other than that, all good. Marty and I are off to some lawn bowls after this. So looking forward to some of Marty's crackerjack jokes, and yeah, let's rip into it.
And it's nice. It's nice that the guys have introduced some form of sport that I can play. I found that lovely, lovely, really. Jace, what have you got?
Oh, mate, look, on this episode, I've gone full sneaker. I'll be talking about a recent experience with Nike, and then also a story about a guy that cleans sneakers and how he's turned it into an empire. What about you guys? What's on today's episode?
Love it, love it. Well, let's play, mate. Let's get straight into it. I'm coming back to Nick because this was, we talked about tennis probably about a couple of weeks ago, and Ash Barty earning an absolute smack load of money for winning the Australian Open and Wimbledon. And Nick asked a really good question in regards to what is the cost of the entourage to run around the world and do what they do. And I did some reading on it, and for the top 20 players, the cost is anywhere between $1 to $2 million a year, and that's broken up into about $750,000 to $1.5 million for coaching, the coaching team itself. Then $30,000 for food, which feels a bit light to me, but anyway, travel $150,000, further training and development $250,000, racket strings and customizations $40,000, and other is $50,000, which I'm assuming is champagne when you win. But that's around about $2 million, guys. So there you go, Nick. Hope that answers the question for you.
I thought it would be more, to be honest. I thought it would have been more than that. I think the answer to your food point is, I think a lot of the food they wouldn't pay for. They wouldn't pay for food at events.
Very true.
They wouldn't pay for food at hotels. So, you know, they're probably just grabbing a bottle of water on the plane and that's about it. Well, they're probably flying business, so they don't even have to pay for that. So, but yeah, I actually would have thought it'd be more than that. I'm quite surprised. I think that's reasonable.
I think it's reasonable. 20,
it's not too bad.
Yep. Yeah. Talking about big spending, Nick, you've got a little story about Crown Casino that you're going to share with us.
Yes. Well, this is the 1%, and I know Jace got a little smirk because I did as well, just how you just changed up the format there really quickly. I love how you just throw some curveball balls at us every now and
play.
Then.
Yeah. Let's play.
we'll call reading the play rather than 1%ers, and we'll let Nick dive into his story, and then I'll round out with a whole shit about sneakers, and it'll be great.
Okay. Well, look, I'm going to say my 1%. 1% and then go into the story. So my 1%er was, you're obviously talking about business and customers and targeting the right customers, but how targeting the wrong customers can get you into trouble, which then leads into my story. And this is, you know, this is not groundbreaking. Everyone knows about this story, and it's about Crown Casino and I guess the colourful people that are seen as their number one clients. Over the past, there was a Royal Commission in Victoria and WA a couple of years ago, and what's come out of that is around 500 breaches of anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism finance provision claims that could amount to more than $1 billion in penalties for Crown Casino. Now, you look at that and you think, oh, $1 billion, that's a bloody lot of money. But what really got me about this article is the amount of money that's gone through that organisation from people that they shouldn't be taking money from. So the overall number is $70 billion has been churned through Crown Casinos by high rollers that were seen as risky people, I guess. It's probably the best way to describe it. And just some of the money. So let me just go back a step. So these people, whether they be involved in drugs, child trafficking, pornography, that it's just endless. But they have what they call junkets. So Crown will take people, and I'm probably telling people they already know here. The Crown will take someone will come over with these people wherever, whichever country they're from, and they'll basically go on a gambling junket. So they're called junkets. One junket. A junket or operator known as Customer 15 allegedly churned $7.6 billion through Crown Melbourne from March 2016 to May 2018 and $860 million through the Perth site over the same period. They clocked combined losses over that, well, just over a two-year period of $38 million. So how much money have these people got to be burning $38 million at Crown Casino? Listen to this. The same junket operator deposited $500,000 cash in their Perth deposit account, all of which was in banknotes of less than $100 and included counterfeit notes. So they're going in there with banknotes of obviously $100 and less, because that's what you can do in Australia. And there's, I'm not sure if any of you have seen any of the docos, but they've got the guy coming in with the big bag of cash at Crown Casino Melbourne and then accepting it and depositing it. So at what stage did Crown not – how can they possibly say that this stuff – they didn't know this stuff was going on? Crown Melbourne made over $1 billion in junket revenue from July 2015 to June 2020, with the total turnover from its VIP program, the junket program, being $220.8 billion. Wow. So – you can kind of understand why they were turning a blind eye. So everyone knows how bad it is. If you watch the docos, it talks about Crown buying off the authorities, basically. So the authorities were too scared to even do anything about it. But the numbers are just crazy. But what this does for Crown, so anyone, people might be across the fact, but there's an acquisition happening by an equity firm called Blackstone, who are actually taking over Crown. And a lot of it's got to do with James Packer needing to be out. Because of the Royal Commission. But these 500 breaches now put this at risk. The takeover deal says that if there's any penalties over $750 million, then Blackstone will pull out of the deal or will possibly pull out of the deal. So if the penalties get up towards $1 billion, which it's looking like they will, that takeover could be off the table as well. So look, a lot of boring stuff in there, but what got me was the numbers, the money. You know, we talk about the value of money, but some of the money that's going through these places is just crazy. And to think that they could walk in with plastic bags and, you know, and duffel and, you know, big sports bags full of cash into Crown Casino in Melbourne and hand that over, it just absolutely baffles me. So you've got to target the right customers as well.
Who would have thought gambling and corruption would have been so closely linked? I mean, that wouldn't happen at the Westburn RSL, I tell you right. It'd be stomped out right away. But it's just filthy money, isn't it? It's and I guess it's just when you look at all those old films like The Casino and, you know, the 80s and 90s, you go, it's not far removed from those films, really. It's just the nature of what it is. And I guess like all businesses – They have to get heavily regulated. English is my second language, excuse me, boys. But and then it comes out the other side a lot better for it. So maybe they're going through that cycle at the moment. Jace, anything to add on that?
Oh, just the sheer scale of it. It just blows my mind just trying to think of those numbers in the billions. It's just sickening. But yeah, look, the Royal Commission's done its job, I hope, tidying it up. Just, wow, we're going to continue to watch and see where it all lands as things continue to come to fruition. But boys, I'm gonna take it into a bit of a lighter territory with a bit of a feel-good story. We love our business startup stories where somebody sees a need in the market or a gap and they go out and have a crack. And my story, I've kind of coined it the Sneaker King. Eugene Cheng, he was studying to be a lawyer. He's now 29 years old, but around the time, 24, 25, he decided, man, being a lawyer is not for me. I don't want to sit behind a desk and you know, tap away at the keyboard. Smart man. It's good on him. And he created a business called the Sneaker Laundry in 2017. Had a passion for sneakers. So again, when you're going to start something and you're passionate about it and you've got purpose. Anyway, since 2017, Eugene has raked in $1.2 million in revenue cleaning people's sneakers over the last 4 years. So, you know, average that, 300 grand a year cleaning shoes. Not bad. He's doing all right, Eugene. Now, what Eugene does is not only, you know, what he's been able to do to continue to scale and grow this business is he noticed the gap in the market when he's a sneaker lover and he went into a shoe shop and said, well, where are your sneaker cleaning kits? You know, I don't want to just go and buy another $200 pair of sneakers to replace the ones that are a little bit scuffed and dirty. I might as well look after the ones I've got. Now, again, speaking to the people out there that, you know, can save some money and not continue to spend all their cash on replacing items that don't need to be replaced, he saw a gap in the market where there wasn't good cleaning kits and there wasn't good knowledge about how to do it. So, not only does he have the Sneaker Laundry offering for you to bring in your shoes and he'll clean them for you, him and his team, they now also sell sneaker cleaning kits so you can touch them up and keep them clean in the interim before you go for a big cleanup. He sells 50 products now. And he's also raising money on Birchall to be able to scale this business and open sneaker cleaning shops. There's one in Melbourne on Little Lonsdale. He wants to open a sneaker laundry in all capital cities all over Australia and then all over the world. So if you want to be a shareholder in the Sneaker Laundry, head to Birchall. You can jump on board and get behind Eugene. What I loved about it as well, just from the feel-good point of view, he talks about how sneakers can take 30 to 40 years to decompose in landfill. And a lot of the times, people are getting rid of their sneakers and they aren't even in bad condition. And after a cleanup, you can almost get a lot of these sneakers to look like brand new. So his business is also a place where if you've got sneakers in decent condition, you can go down there and donate your sneakers. They will clean them up and they'll donate them to charity so that people who can't afford to buy new runners, new shoes, new kicks can get access to beautifully cleaned up, almost brand new looking shoes. And I thought that was pretty bloody nice.
Unbelievable. And who would have thought? Well, actually, I would have thought because the sneaker craze, it's real. And I'm not into sneakers. You know, I wear them until they're dead and then I throw them out. But we have a nephew and he opened my eyes to this over Christmas time that Nike are making these shoes and you can only buy them on consignment. So what actually happened was my wife bought these shoes. They were expensive Nikes, like a baby blue, like they actually look pretty cool. And so he opens them up at Christmas and the look on his face was unbelievable, absolutely priceless. He couldn't believe that he'd been bought these shoes. And then I said to Alicia, I said, you should have got him a size bigger. You know, coming from a frugal family, it was, we buy a size bigger because he's still growing. And that way he can keep them for longer. You shouldn't have bought the right size. But then I found out you can't actually buy a size bigger with these shoes. So with a lot of these Nike sneakers now, they're on consignment. So it's not a matter of just sending them back and getting the next size, that is the sneaker. So that sneaker's obviously got a, I don't know how it works, you might know more than I do, Jace, but that sneaker's got a code and that's your sneaker and that's it. So, and look, I don't even think he's going to wear them. I think they're going to go into the collection. But yeah, so my eyes got opened up to the sneaker world over Christmas. And what he then proceeded to show me was what some people are paying for sneakers.
Yeah.
And thousands and millions of dollars depending on the sneaker. So, you know, I think he's nailed it. You got to keep them clean.
I love the simplicity of the idea. Like, goes back to the fundamentals of shoe shining. And I just think that's so clever in regards to longevity of the product, you know, giving it to charities. It's like, it's just such a simple, clever idea. And a lot of times in business, they're the things that really work. So I think that's a brilliant story.
Yeah, and his customers are sneaker freaks like him. So he's relating to his customers. He knows who his target market are. We're talking about targeting customers and keeping them loyal. You know, and that's exactly what he's doing. He's upsell the cleaner kit on the way out the door after they've had their sneakers cleaned. Yep. So, hey, you don't need to come back to me as regularly. Do a little bit of a touch up yourself and boom, away you go. And then during COVID, he pivoted to an online version as well where you could send your shoes in. It was factored into the cost, the shipping there, shipping back, and then also buy through the e-commerce store your own cleaning kit. So if you couldn't get the shoes there, you could touch them up at home online. So happy days. Well done, Eugene.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
All right, it's that special time of the podcast where we choose to lose it and learn something from losing it. And today, Jason Robinson, we're talking about customer loyalty and the importance of building good customer loyalty, but you've got a losing it story with Nike. So if they were going to sponsor us, maybe not so much now, but the story's great. So share your experience with Nike.
Yeah, Marty, thank you for allowing me to have two losing its in a row. I feel very honoured. Nike, wow. To put it into context or to put some framing around this, I basically almost wear no other activewear than Nike. Like, I've absolutely loved it my entire life. And then I read the book where he was actually a CPA accountant at the age of 30 before Nike took off. So then I felt even more connected to the brand that this accountant, you know, went and built this billion-dollar global shoe brand and empire. Anyway, so in December, I decided to order a pair of my favorite shoes, a loyal customer that I am. I've jumped online. I saw they were 30% off. They're my running shoes. I'm training for another marathon, so I wanted to get another pair of these shoes. They're Vaporflies. They're expensive, but they were 30% off. So I thought, I've got to lock in 30% off. So I bought them online, bought my size, didn't care what color I got, and then went off on honeymoon with Case for 3 weeks. So I came back mid-January, nearly a month later, super pumped to get my delivery, and I've ripped the box open. And they've sent me the wrong shoes. They've sent me a pair of size 9s in some $70 shoes that just completely irrelevant. So then I was pretty pumped that they had a phone number you could call to speak to a human. I thought, hi, you beauty. I don't have to lodge something online and wait for, you know, several days for a response. So I called up and spoke to someone who was quite helpful and said, look, really sorry, but you have to take your shoes back to Australia Post. You have to put them back in a box. You have to print a return label. You know, it was all this stuff that made me have to go out of my way to return a pair of shoes that were sent to me wrong. Hey, look, accidents happen. She explained it well. And then went on to say that once the shoes that I was delivered go back to Nike, they would be able to send me my order. So I was a little bit peeved. I'm like, you know, it's still pretty shitty that I have to wait now. Who knows, another couple of weeks for this to happen. And then sure enough, a month goes by. It's now the middle of Feb. And I hadn't got my shoes. It's 2 months after I've ordered my shoes. I'm getting fat. I need to start running for this marathon training. And so I call back up. And whoever I got this time goes, oh, no, that's not how it works. Once we get your shoes back, you'll just get a refund. You know, we're not shipping you those shoes. To which I was very disappointed because now these shoes aren't on sale anymore. And again, I'm an accountant. I wanted to be frugal. I wanted to save my 30%. So I explained to the lady, I've sent the shoes back a month ago. I don't even have a refund, nor do I have a replacement pair of shoes. Can you at least just ship me a size 12 in the pair that I ordered? I don't care what color it is. She goes, look, let me go and speak to my manager. I'll see what I can do. Puts me on hold for a few minutes. Comes back. No, we can't do that because the color you ordered isn't on sale anymore. And they refused to basically match my purchase of a 30% off pair of shoes. And for some reason, even though they didn't deliver the shoes that I ordered, I'm now inconvenienced. I can't get my shoes at 30% off because I was sent the wrong pair. So the outcome I now think Under Armour is really bloody cool, and I'm thinking Under Armour might be my new brand. And Nike, if you want to fix this, you have an opportunity. No, I've lodged a customer complaint, and I have seen a response come through in the last day or two, so I'll check that out. But customer loyalty can be lost really quick, and that's kind of the lesson in the losing it right here, is that a lifelong absolute avid lover of Nike has turned around and shared this story with you guys to say that I've had a really shit experience, and a shitty experience can lose a customer.
Well, Jace, firstly, I'd be very surprised if Phil Knight is not listening. So I think you've done the right thing in airing your concerns, because I have no doubt that Phil's listening and is doing something about that for you right now.
Thanks, Phil. Big fan, Phil. Thank you.
For me, I just don't online shop, really, because well, firstly, I've got an odd bod, so it's very hard to pick the size. And I generally find whatever I buy, I'm just back at the post office, posting it back anyway and getting a refund, and then going to do the shopping that I didn't want to do in the first place. So, but there's, particularly at the moment, there's so much going wrong with, and the whole reason would be that it took so long is because of the supply chain issues at the moment and whatnot. But if you're going to go down that path as a business, which all businesses do, particularly in retail, and they save themselves so much money by doing it that way, you've got to rectify problems ASAP. And that's not just product business. That's us in our business as well. When we make mistakes in our business, if we're at fault, the customer does not lose. That's the first decision that we make, whether it's a, you know, to put it into an example, if a settlement's missed because something went amiss with our admin team or with one of our brokers, and there's settlement costs that shouldn't have been there. We pay those straight away, and then we work out what went wrong after that. You cannot have the customer out of pocket because you made a mistake, and that's on all levels, services and you know, providing products. So it just baffles me that Nike don't have someone in there who makes a decision that says, get that fixed, we'll worry about the rest later. It just absolutely baffles me.
I was a bit shocked. So, you're right.
You should be shocked, mate, because the right thing to do would have been to courier your shoes directly to you as soon as possible with a bag to put those replacement shoes that you didn't want back in.
Marty.
And that would have been the right thing to do, and you would have gone, well, how good is that? They made a mistake, but look how important I am and look how quickly they rectified it. So, Phil Knight, if you are listening, maybe three pairs of shoes out to the host of the Numbers Game might be most appropriate in this situation.
Can see this going on YouTube already.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
All right, guys, it's 1% time, and we're talking all things customers and customer loyalty off the back of my Nike story. I'm obviously a little bit fired up and upset, but let's not let that bring us down, guys. Let's talk about, Marty, I want to throw to you to start off with. You are big on having the right customers in your business for you and targeting that. How does that all look from your point of view? Tell us about customer loyalty and targeting the right customers from your point of view.
Yeah, I think about from a loyalty standpoint, I always think that if I can do a great job for a client, we're a word of mouth business, like even though we have marketing budgets and things like that, but technically we're a word of mouth business. So if we do a great job for the client, we're all about that client then sharing that story with someone else, just like you've done with the Nike thing in reverse. What's people saying about us at the barbecue? You know, what are people saying about us to their friends? And it's really about instilling, like I know when I look at doing a deal, I treat that home loan or that investment loan as if I'm doing my own loan for a client. That's the level of buy-in I want that client to feel. And it's really important. And you've got to know as a business also who you are looking to target as well. Like a lot of people in business go wide early because they're just trying to get mass market, trying to see what comes through the door. But I think it's really important to know what your sweet spot is as a business, and even as an individual professional, what type of clientele you want to deliver to and deliver your service to that avatar. And just to give you an example, I've probably spent 20 years in the mortgage broking business now, and my avatar was always the mum and dad that had a home that was looking to buy their first investment property. That was my sweet spot. They were 35 years of age. They had two kids. They were thinking about legacy for their kids as well. Professionals, had decent incomes. And that was my target market. So now you're not always going to hit that exactly every time, but 80% of your clientele end up based on where your focus lies. So for me, targeting is really important because I want to work with the type of clients I want to work with. And I'm individualizing it here. Businesses have their own format on that. And the loyalty is that I really care. I want the clients to feel a sense of that I'm looking after them, looking after their transaction, that they're important to me and the business. And then also that they have that great experience on execution, make it simple for them. And then they obviously go and spread that, you know, spread that story out there in the market. But that's something that's always been really important to me, because like you just said before, Jace, you know, you could take 10 years to build a reputation and ruin it in one transaction, you know, if you behave poorly and you don't really look after clients' best intentions. So you can rip apart very quickly something you spend a long time to build. But that would be my tip, is to really understand who your avatar of client is, and also create a loyalty program for them. Like for me, even like used to run appreciation nights for people that supported the business, and you'd have a dinner, sit down dinner, something different to what other people do, get everyone in a room, and that just amplifies that loyalty and opportunity. And you weren't doing it because you told them to do it. They were doing it because they wanted to do it, and then you just rewarded that and just amplified that result. But that would be my little snapshot on how I view it, you know, from an individual standpoint. Any additions to that?
I've got a question. Is that the work that you liked to do? Because the first thing I thought about then was, well, you've chosen a target market, but whether it's because of profitability, like what's the best market for you, but it's probably also the work that you actually enjoy and the people that you want to work with, which means you're probably going to be more efficient, you're actually going to be better at your pitch, and you're actually going to drive more business because it's the stuff that you want to do as well, not just the stuff you think you should be doing.
Fantastic question. I absolutely loved working with that type of clientele, and I really enjoyed investing. I enjoy investing myself, so I love dealing with that market, but also strategically where other brokers might be doing one loan, which was the home loan, I would always have two loans going on. So my return on output was actually a lot better profitability-wise because I just had larger loan sizes overall in doing the same amount of work for that client. So it was based on the passion of what I enjoyed, but also finding that profitability within that passion that led to the result. And I could still do other home loans, obviously, and one-off deals, but that ended up being my sweet spot that really accelerated the business because it, on those fundamentals that you just pointed out, Nick, it was absolutely a part of that focus as well. It was a great question.
It's your passion, I guess. And if it's your passion, it's very easy to talk about it and then take people along the journey. So
I picked up on that word too, Nick, passion, right? So when you're working on something that's your passion and it's connected to your purpose, it is so much easier to go about doing your day-to-day job when you have those things aligned. One thing that we deal with a lot of the time when working with business owners is having that connection between who is your target customer, but then taking that back a few steps, if you look at your, you know, every single business, the ecology of a business should be mission, vision, values, purpose, expectation, and standard operating procedures, or standards of operations. Now, in all of that, that should help you define who your target customer is. Like why your business exists should be tied into who you're helping and who your target customer is. A lot of people don't go back to basics and look, I've been guilty of it too. Start a business and target, you know, throw the net far and wide and target everyone. Work with an individual on a $50,000 salary and a business turning over 50 mil and try and be the best at both of them. But sometimes you've got to be able to niche that down and target the sweet spot of who you should be working with. And, you know, Marty shared his avatar of who the ideal target client is for Marty. And that's not to mean Marty doesn't work with anybody else ever. But if he was going to go and target his marketing or, you know, conversations with people, it's going to be around those customers as his main target.
Yeah, you're right, Jason. And to me, you mentioned the word, you know, passion as well. But that really, now thinking about it, that really comes out of loving to see people do well. I mean, and we talked about in previous episode the issues of financial literacy out there in the market with governments trying to build websites that are irrelevant, you know, to try and help the position. But to me, I've always been a big advocate of seeing everyday mums and dads do better, and it just has to be simple, effective strategy. And I'm sure that comes out of a family environment where I know my parents weren't shown that, which would have helped them at the time. But just knowing what I know and being able to support people, that passion is driven out of that financial literacy of going, if I can open the door to the idea of people doing better for the future and having brighter futures, then that's really a motivator for me. That's what drives myself, coming from a deep core, you know, value. So I think if you can get that right and create, you know, absolutely commercial fundamentals around that passion, and it doesn't always work out that way. You're better to get the commercial fundamentals right, because I see lots of people still do very well, but usually there's a seed of driver that comes out of something that's really close to the founder that they want to leverage in the market. And if you can get those two humming, it's very powerful. Yeah,
just to share an example from knowing your customer and targeting the right customer, we went through a case study internally the other day, and it was about a builder, and this builder did 4 or 5 big builds and renovations per year. And then on the weekends, he'd also go and build decks and pergolas for mates and kind of do that on the side. And what it turned out was he actually made more money and got more enjoyment and fulfillment from building decks and pergolas so that families had an outdoor entertaining area, something that looked beautiful as an addition to the home and added value to the home, but it was something that they really enjoyed doing. The big renovations and home builds were stressful, low margin, so much could go wrong. So then that conversation led to, well, what if you stopped doing that and you focused on becoming the best boutique deck builder in Melbourne? And then the excitement that business owner gets is almost like, you know, and that's the enjoyment of what I do as a job, getting to kind of have those eye-opening moments. But when you know your target customer, that's the kind of satisfaction you can get from what you do. You know, you got to look at the demotivators, what's stressing you out, what shouldn't you be doing, and start to work on, you know, your customer journey and the ideal person you should be targeting.
No, I totally agree with Jace. I think you know, many a great business. You are always the consumer as an individual. So if there's something that you're excited and passionate about, I feel like there is an opportunity in that if you're looking closely enough. So I think that taps into that. We all have podcasting for us, we wouldn't thought we'd be podcasters, but this is really enjoyable. I don't know where it leads to, but it's a project that we do that we all come together, we enjoy, and again, you just don't know what that ends up leading to in some way, shape or form, but that's a perfect example.
Yeah, spot on, Marty. And in that, right, so from a passion and purpose point of view, we thoroughly enjoy providing value to our listeners and giving them tips and tricks and things to get ahead in life. Now, part of what I've written down as developing customer loyalty is around providing value and nurturing your clients. Now, podcast is a great example. We're providing value and we're nurturing the people that listen to our show. We seek their feedback. We want their lives to be better. And if that's not developing customer loyalty, then I don't know what is. We've talked about as well in some of the notes was around referral programs as part of customer loyalty as well. I think that's a really great thing to have a look at implementing if you don't have a structured referral program in what you do. And that can apply to e-commerce, professional services, you know, the coffee shop that does the buy four, get one free. Any business that has a referral program, I mean, it's the psychology of the buyer. I mean, giving away that little extra thing or getting them involved in a community of people, I think that's a fantastic. You guys seen any examples of referral programs done well or anything that pops to mind?
Look, it's something that we need to get better at as a business, and I think bringing this content up for this week's episode, it actually made me think about what we should actually be doing, because one of the things that I've noticed over the years through mortgage broking and financial planning is those clients that refer you on to someone else. So once you do a good job for someone, there's clients that just continuously refer people to you for the next 10, 15 years, and You know, I could name probably 7 or 8 people off the top of my head that over the last 13 years have been great promoters of our business, and they're just existing clients. So I think recognizing that is extremely important, because you know, it's far cheaper than paying for marketing or whatnot. They're the best advocate you can have. So you know, it's something that we need to think about for our own business, but it also needs to be something that they're going to get value out of. And I think the coffee stuff is a great example, you know, the fifth coffee cup for free, because you're going there every day. So you know that you're going to get on the fifth day or on the 10th day, whenever it is, you know you're going to get value. And you know, we talked about Marty's double shot oat milk $5.50 latte. So you know that you're going to get $5.50 back in your pocket on day 10. So it has to be something that they're really going to, I guess, appreciate. Now, what it made me think of is it made me think of things like Qantas or Citibank or Amex. Like, a lot of people get these points and actually don't do anything with them. Now, there's some people that run those programs really well, but for most people, they don't use the card enough, or you know, you get the rewards brochure, and there's all these places you can go if you've got the time, or you can go to Hoyts and maybe I don't go to Hoyts. So I think you have to really think about, what is your customer going to get value out of? Is that a reduction in the price that you charge them if they refer someone? Is it, you know, why does it have to be a reward? Why can't it just be a gift card with $50 or $100? You know they're definitely going to spend that, because they can put the Visa card in their Apple wallet and go and buy their groceries with it. So I'd encourage people to understand who your good clients are that keep continuously refer people to you. And I think if you own a small business and you think about that for a minute, you'll straight away go, yes, that's her, and yes, that's him. I know exactly who those clients are, and I need to do something for those clients to make sure that they understand that I do appreciate what they do, and make sure it's something that they're going to get value out of. You know, what has always baffled me, and real estate agents, don't take this the wrong way, but you know, getting hampers and stuff when you settle on a property. The amount of hampers that hit our office over Christmas, and I just go, we don't want anything in that. You know, there's maybe some stuff my great-grandmother would have used if she was cooking a cake one day, or there might be, you know, one bottle of wine in this massive hamper that we're actually going to get value out of. But add value. Don't send hampers. Don't send things as a token. Send something that people are actually going to use and get something back for. But yeah, I'd really encourage people to have a think about where your business comes from, and you'll find 2 or 3 of your clients will just be consistent referrers for you.
An example of that, the music app Spotify. I've obviously listened to Spotify, listened to songs on Spotify, but now as a listener, they've offered me 3 months of the premium service for free. So now I can choose the songs I want, I can fast forward, listen to it whenever I want, and it's fantastic. You know, it's really next level. There's no ads or anything, but that was great. They've given me 3 months, which is a significant trial period, to have an experience of what it's like to be in their private wealth service. And I find myself now justifying in my head, going, oh, well, you know, it's $5 or $10 a month. I used to buy a CD back in the 80s for $20 and put it in my car. And I find myself now having those types of conversations in order that they've made me feel special, and they've given me accessibility to something that I'm actually utilizing more of. And I thought that was just a really, you know, really great example of how to go about it. Now, I don't know what I'll end up doing, but I think I might, you know, continue on with what's happening. And I thought, yeah, it was an interesting example.
I think another example, you just made me think of it, but Audible. There's so many times I've gone to cancel my Audible subscription, and then I've realized I get one free with the monthly subscription, which is not much, but I get a free download every month. So I go in there and I've got credits, and I'm like, okay, I don't have to buy the book. I can just download it. So little things like that to me is value, because I'm on Audible because I want the books. So give me more books. Don't give me a cheaper Hoyts ticket, you know, because I don't go to Hoyts. So
yeah,
just be really targeted.
I love that as well. And like, one of the things is using your customer data. Like, so if you're building a business, you got a customer or a client database, so many people don't actually use the value of their database, and whether it's because they don't have a, you don't even need a fancy CRM to be able to do it. And an example, we every day in our business, one of the team gets all of the birthdays and puts it into a Slack channel so that the whole team can see whose birthday it is on that day. And then we know that if we're communicating with that client in emails or calls that day, it's such a nice feeling to be able to go, well, happy birthday. When they answer the phone, they go, what? You know, it's my birthday today. You've either called me to go out of your way to say happy birthday, or, you know, often enough, we get an email from that person on the day and all the team fire back an email saying happy birthday and send gifts and silly pictures and stuff. And it's such a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling for that person to get a happy birthday message from the relationship with their accountant. But that's so simple, right? We've got the data there. We know it's their birthday. One thing that we've started trying to do is same thing, Nick, you know, we can always get better with our sending gifts or referral program or rewarding customers. And, you know, we're getting into an age where a lot of our clients are similar age to Greg and Shelley and I, and they're starting to have their first children, a lot of our clients. And we're now just going, okay, cool, pops up on Instagram, boy or girl, wicked, send them a beautiful little baby gift that says congratulations. And, you know, it's like a little blanket and a bunny or, you know, one of the little rattle toys, whatever babies get these days. I'm still not up to date with that. I'll get there eventually. But yeah, you know, and that report that builds and just that feeling of connection to our business and loyalty that, man, like they took their time to send us a little gift because we've had a baby. Like that's not connected to their accounting at all, or, you know, it's just a nice thing, feel good thing to do. And mate, there's little things you can do. You just got to figure out what it is for you and that's going to help your business and how you can develop and strengthen that loyalty.
You hit a good point, Jace. People in this day and age aren't often surprised. And that's a really, probably going back 20 years ago, that sort of thing happened a lot more than it does now, just because there's so much tech involved everywhere. So those things really do stand out. And you can, I mean, I'm coming out of 80s and 90s and 2000s, but even back then, you can actually educate your clients to be loyal. And that sounds like almost a facetious thing to say, but it's like your salespeople, you know, your clients are your sales force ultimately, and you can say that this is how we do business. And it's interesting, even philosophically, when I look at it and I'm looking at a client and I'm treating them almost like a family member. Now, that can be wrong in some businesses too, but if I'm doing that and then I'm doing a good job for them and I'm educating them to, if you have any other family and friends, I'm happy to support them, then you get that extensive network effect of actually supporting families, you know, beyond family, you know, next generations. And it's really powerful. I mean, it used to be the norm a long time ago, and I'm sure we can do that even smarter in this day and age. But I love that story of what you said when someone has a baby, because you're surprising someone. The best gifts I've got is when someone's rang my wife and found out what I liked.
Yeah.
You know, and personalize it. I've never forgotten those gifts.
Yeah, because if somebody sends you a bottle of wine,
I don't drink.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of those reasons why, like, the standard generic hamper for everyone. Like, not everyone drinks red wine or whatever that is. So, you know, being able to put some thought and effort and energy into it, but also making it, you know, something that's easy for the business to do. Like, there's got to be a bit of a strategy behind it.
That's right.
I think the other thing too, and, you know, not to put a negative spin on it, this is actually a positive spin, but when you've got those close relationships with your clients that go beyond the transaction, if things ever go wrong,
definitely,
which they do in all businesses, if things go wrong in our business, it's a lot easier when you've got that relationship with that client. You 9 times out of 10 you'll maintain the client and you won't lose the client. When there's no relationship and there's nothing outside of the transaction, as soon as something goes wrong, you'll lose that client. But if it's a deeper relationship than the transaction, then if a mistake's made, you know, everyone's got staff, we make mistakes, I make mistakes, it'll generally get overlooked and the relationship will continue on. So I've definitely noticed that with my own clients as a mortgage broker in the past. You know, when there's a deeper relationship than the transaction, they're okay. They work with you and you work through it together. Where I don't think it would have been the same if the relationship wasn't as deep as it was.
You're right, Nick. You earn the right to get the benefit of the doubt and you work through it. It's so true. So question to you, gentlemen, is the customer always right?
I'll let Nick go first.
I say yes. And Yes, with an asterisk. Why do I say yes? Because I think you need to do what you need to do to protect your business and protect your customer. At times, the customer will not be right, but I think you, as a business, you need to be the one that. I'm not sure how to explain this, but you need to be the one that rectifies things, whether it's your fault or the client's fault. You're the professional, and you're the one that needs to work through it. Now, of course, the client at times is wrong, but what are you doing to help educate them and to help make it right? Why are they wrong? Why do they think you've done something wrong if you haven't? What have you done to educate them? Yeah, you know, how do you work through that with the client instead of just saying you're wrong, see you later? There's always, you know, if you have, again, we come back to relationships. If you can sit down and have a conversation and a relationship and work through a problem, to the old saying, there's no problems, there's only solutions, and that's how you've got to approach things with clients, whether you're in the wrong or them. What's the outcome? The problem's happened. What's the outcome we're trying to get to? Let's get there together so we can move past this. So, yes, with an asterisk.
Yeah, and yeah, Nick, well said. I'm completely agree and feel the same. Is the customer always right? I was born and bred a McDonald's worker. So somebody comes through and says, this cheeseburger's cold. It's yes, the cheeseburger's cold. They get a new one. Whether you knew you just cooked that thing and it was piping hot or not, it's just, you know, and, you know, to take away from the McDonald's example, if a customer is feeling like something's wrong, it's because the relationship hasn't been set up right from the start and the expectations of both people's behavior in that relationship wasn't set up right from day one. We unfortunately had something happen this week where a client, you know, was a bit shocked by an invoice, and you know, our ethos and our methodology is that we don't send invoices that nobody knew about. There's a conversation up front. You're quoted a fee proposal. You know what the fee is going to be, and for some reason, this got missed, and the client was upset. They got an invoice they didn't know about, even though they engaged in a service, they sat through a meeting, they got some beautiful advice, but unless it's all set up right and that everyone knows what's going on, you've got to be able to cop some bad feedback or you know, that bad feedback. I take it as good feedback. We learn from it. Our business develops and gets better. But education in all aspects, both ways, if we can learn from it, you know, why would the customer be wrong in that aspect? Customer was right. We got to learn from it.
Yeah. And my asterisk is customers always right unless they're trying to take advantage by trying to make you wrong. Yeah. And that's that. You'll always get that type of client, not so frequently, but I've come across them occasionally, you know, probably 3 or 4 times in 20 years. And then you have to, they're obviously not the right avatar from the beginning. So your targeting hasn't been good, but you know, you need to know when to draw a line too if someone's legitimately taking advantage of you or your business as
well. Spot on. That's been episode 39 of The Numbers Game. Just to get it into everyone's heads, we love what we do, but we want more people to hear us. So please share us with your friends and family. Send them a link. Tell them about us and the episodes that you've loved. And boys, in the wrap up, what have you guys enjoyed about episode 39? Customer loyalty and knowing your customers.
Oh, Jace, I think you've just nailed it. Knowing your customers and the customer experience ultimately is everything, because that's the story that's going to be shared with the market. So we want to keep creating those great customer experiences, and I look forward to those runners coming through from Nike. Nick?
Look, for me, it was, you know, as much as, Marty, you mentioned about your ideal customer and what you want to focus on and what service you want to deliver, but you know, if you are a small business owner, sit down and have a think about your circles of influence and who's actually referring clients to you. And I think you'll be surprised, and you'll probably pick out 2 or 3 people and you go, geez, they always send me clients. Keep those people tight, recognize that, because I can guarantee you they'll continue to do that for the next 10 to 15 years. And Jace, what is happening? Do we have any money back? Do we have any Nikes? Do we have any Under Armour? How are the Under Armour's going?
Oh, mate, no Nikes yet. Refund, I have to go check the credit card statement to make sure it's landed, but I don't know for sure yet. I've just been left feeling a bit disheartened by the whole thing, to be honest, and I'm devastated. My knee's starting to blow up a little bit because I'm using shoes that are a bit too hard now, but that's not a review of the Under Armour's. That's just some old Nikes.
I could see Phil Knight there now, just listening to this going, do we really want Jason as a customer?
Well, no, and to round out the customer feedback side, my thing is, you know, in developing customer loyalty, I want to share with this example, which is just, you know, for you to think about. So whether it's, you know, the gift to the client that's just had a baby, which is unexpected, but the simplest thing that I've loved would be when I walk into a coffee shop and the barista knows my name and knows my coffee order. I feel I will always go back to that place. If there's three or four coffee shops in a row, I'm going back to that one. It's the simple things you can do to develop customer loyalty that are the surprise and that feels good. And that's what I love. So think about how you can do that with your clients.
I think, Jace, when we had breakfast the other week around the corner from my house, shout out to Vinny. It doesn't matter who you are near in Port Melbourne, he knows their name and he knows the coffee. And it actually blows me away. And Jace experienced it firsthand the other week when we had breakfast together. So, yeah, little things like that people don't expect. And you can just see when people go into that cafe, they absolutely love him. And for me, I just will go nowhere else now.
Scrambled eggs.
I do think it's the best coffee in Port Melbourne, but there's just no – and the best scrambled eggs in Melbourne by a mile – but there is no way I would go anywhere else, because it's actually interesting to watch him sit there and the customers come in, knows their coffee, knows their name, knows their kids, mucks around with their kids. It's just incredible to watch, and it's customer service 101, and yeah, that's how you build a really good business.
Well, I feel like coffee and scrambled eggs, so boys, game over.